Technorama episode 500. It's all downhill from here.
500 is the natural number following 499 and preceding 501. 500 is a Harshad number in bases 5, 6, 10, 11, 13, 15, and 16. 500 in binary is 1111101000. 500 in hex is 0x1f4. 500 miles is a famous song by the Proclaimers. 500 is the HTTP status code for internal server error. 500 is an SMTP status code, meaning a syntax error has occurred due to an unrecognized command. 500 is the actual number of Spartans that were in the army, but 200 were off that weekend. 500 is the distance for the Indianapolis 500 and the Daytona 500. 500 is the number of times Craig has mispronounced a name on the On This Day in History segment. 500 is the number of times we have visited the Media Corner. 500 is the number of texts that Lenny has sent Chuck and Craig begging to get back on the show. And 500 is also the number of this episode.
Good morning, folks. This is your captain speaking.
Technorama.
Remember when?
Technorama.
On this day in tech history.
Tech.
And now, the news.
Tech.
What the chuck?
Technorama.
Welcome to Blockhead Video.
I am looking for a DVD collection of 500 episodes of the classic podcast Technorama.
Over there, in the media corner.
What is a DVD?
Technorama.
Hold my beer and watch this.
Unfasten your seatbelts and disregard all safety rules. Here, your flight crew, Chuck and Craig.
Nice.
And the chat room says, I didn't know you guys could count so high.
Yeah. Because of the internet, we don't have to.
Nice.
Well done, Craig. And
very
special
nice.
Thanks to Mark the Encaffeinated One for the voiceover. Sounded like he was half in the bag on that one.
Hey, that's the best way to podcast.
Some of the most creative moments.
That's right.
Hey, welcome to Technorama. This is the show that takes a lighthearted look at tech, science, sci-fi, and all things geek. If this is your first time joining us, thank you very much. We appreciate it. If you are returning, welcome back. Some of you may only be returning for the first time, some for the 500th time. Thank you. It is just an honor and a joy that some of you have been with us the whole lot of this. I am Chuck Tomasi from sunny Phoenix, Arizona, and joining me is Craig Stepp. How are you, Craig?
I am great. Actually, I was trying to decide if I wanted to use the same joke I did a minute ago or not.
just go with it.
Whatever feels
good.
I've
done 500 podcasts, and boy, am my arms tired. My lips are too.
Also joining us in the binary studio is...
Hey, Michael Erminigay. How you doing?
Hey, Michael.
The originator of this studio. If it looks familiar, it's because it's him.
Yeah.
It's still a paint job on the wall.
The paint job's up. There's a few things that still look the same. Not much.
Some of the electronics have changed, but yeah. The rest of the room is mostly
improved
intact.
A lot. It's improved a lot.
There's been some additions. Hey, we've got a lot of stuff in this show. Thank you for joining us again. If you are watching this live on the Facebook stream and liked the first take, or liked the second one even better.
I know.
That's why we were debating about using the shows. We have
Yes. Hey, wait, I have to say one thing. I always thought it was funny when we've ever recorded the show and then we went back and did it again that same
faster.
Night because we forgot to record or something. We ended up shaving like 10 minutes off of it.
Well, you already got it out. You know, it's hard to go back and do the same thing all over again.
No, we can do it. The brain patterns are still the same.
Hey, we make the same jokes. We do the same thing over and over, but it's all a little tighter.
Sing about those lovely letters. Oh, we get letters.
We get your letters every day.
Almost every day.
Yeah. Except for major holidays.
Those letters, I love those letters. Our postman's got PTSD.
Oh, hopefully not. Don't answer the door. Don't answer the door.
Mailman only rings once.
He shoots twice. Never mind.
No,
you know, we're not going there. Moving on. Moving on.
We have one from Mike in Des Moines. And I think this is the one that should have been played first last time.
Yeah. Hey, Chuck and Craig. This is Mike from Des Moines. And I just thought I'd call and tell you congratulations for reaching 500. And I hope
you're welcome.
Hear many more. And thanks for having the...
Yes?
Mm-hmm.
Yes?
Yeah. Go ahead.
I think there was a frack in there somewhere.
Take two.
Take two.
Click. Hey, Jeff and Craig. This is Mike from Des Moines.
Hey, Mike.
I thought I would call. And
long time no here.
On 500. And I hope you can do 500 more. Hopefully better.
Yeah.
Thanks, I think.
Well, yeah, that's a offhanded compliment.
It's just asking a lot.
You're very welcome, Mike, and thank you for listening. I don't believe we've ever heard from Mike in Des Moines, or it's been a really long time. Because we don't have a bumper for him.
I think he was one of ours.
Was he a slicer?
I think he was.
Mike leave behind a few microphones, but he also left behind some listeners.
Yeah, he's an immigrant, unfortunately.
Ask Technorama, we get the leftovers.
That's pretty much this show. Yep. If no other podcast wants it, it ends up here.
Right. It is the island of lost podcasts.
And listeners.
And listeners. And
nobody
technology.
Wants a Technorama in a box.
It's a mixer that's got square wheels. Who wants that?
They have water pistols that shoot jelly.
Okay, now we need to move on.
One more voicemail. This one is from, I know this is from a longtime listener, our good friend Ranger Craig.
Hey, Chuck and Craig. It's Craig, Ranger Craig from San Francisco.
Yay!
I want to give you a shout out and a congratulations on your longevity online. I still am following your show. I can't even imagine how many years it's been, but it's been a long time.
Decades.
And Chuck, you know, people still talk about the training you did for us here in the Bay Area on podcasting. It's a much-loved training that you did for us. And people may not know this.
Are you reading the transcript?
No.
Hughes payment stipend for his trip. We paid his way and put him up. But he volunteered his time as a fan of the national parks. You guys are great. Your show is great. I hope I'm listening to you well for the rest of time. And
the rest of time.
You're stuck. You can never quit.
We got to be here till the universe goes dark.
Well, Chuck, that's one.
I've heard of putting a bell on the headstone, you know, just in case you're alive down there, but actually putting a podcast rig in the casket so
a
that
microphone.
You can, and a microphone so you can continue podcasting from the afterlife. That's impressive.
Welcome to the Deadcast.
Hey, is he breathing?
The transcript here says, I can't even imagine how many years it's been, but it's been a long time And then truck people still talk about the training you did for us here in the Bay Area on podcasting. It's much loud training. I love Google.
The y'all translate is just awesome. And you wonder why you get all those wonderful translations from Chinese.
Who told Chuck all the students were deaf? Yelling at him.
That's why I'm not a park ranger, I guess.
And then you hit record.
We also had a question last week. Our question of the week to you was, what computer game is a classic to you? And by George, we got a lot of responses on this. Only taking some of the highlights here, so apologies if you had an answer in our thread, either on the main Technorama page or to one that we had shared. Had a lot of fun with this. Andy Helsby writes in, so many to choose from. I spent many hours with Hollywood Hijink from Infocom, but didn't get very far on my Amstrad CPC 6128 that ran CPM.
Wow.
That's an old timer. Yeah, he's up in our age range. Other classics would include Doom, Duke Nukem, Castle Wolfenstein, but the first game I ever played was Snake on a Commodore PET.
Ooh,
and I'll bet it was in ASCII. Classic. Yes.
That is kind of a classic game. Even on cell phones, that was...
You can still find Snake. It's still a pretty fun game to play.
Hey, remember on the Nokia phones, it had Snake on there?
Yes.
Yeah,
I had the I was with you. Pong was probably the first console game. The first computer game had to be the Lunar Landing program that was on
all text.
Yeah, that was all text.
Here's your velocity. I can't.
It was vector line graphics. So after you put information in, it would come in and go. And it'd take like 5 minutes to render so that it would before it would actually play.
You had plenty of time to plan your crash.
Exactly.
Could anybody land that darn thing?
I don't know.
I think before that, I had handheld games, the little digital LED ones.
Oh, like, yeah, the Mattel football. Mattel and Coleco had them.
Coleco, yeah. I think this was a Mattel one. I think it was called Sub Hunt or Sea Hunter or something like that. And it was. Yeah.
I've seen that.
It was like 10 or like maybe 20, 30 LEDs in a thing, and that was it. It was just,
and all it did was
chase LEDs across the screen.
Yeah.
And you had to, when you set a depth charge, it was just the LEDs scrolling down this way to catch the LEDs moving this way. That was it. I mean, it's the simplest thing ever.
I think that they subscribe to the Infocom mantra where, your mind was the greatest graphics engine.
Theater to the mind.
Exactly. I mean, it was just red LEDs. That's it. Red LEDs on a grid.
When you said something for a minute, I thought you were talking about Lloyd Bridges' Sea Hunt.
Oh, yeah, no.
Different show, different time.
No, I think Sea Hunter, I think, was the name of it or something like that.
I did think all those Mattel games, they all had the same, they probably had the same programming, circuit board, except for the rules were different. Because they had like little dashes.
Yeah,
it was just sequential lights. That's all
it was. Here's hockey. Here's soccer.
Yes.
Yeah.
And then they slap a different plastic front end on it.
Exactly. And it was. I think it was the same panel, the same thing, and it was just the different way that they sequenced the lights that made the different game. And the crazy part about it, it's the most damn engaging game ever. I mean, you could stop playing the stupid thing. And it was just LEDs chasing each other around on a screen.
I know. Why is that one blinking?
Yeah, exactly. What is that one?
That's the football. I'm playing hockey.
Playing hockey.
Matt Baum says, Power Pete, also Harry the Handsome Executive. I have never heard of either of those.
That's still a name.
I wonder if it's a UK thing or something. I do not know. Don't even know where Matt is from, but thank you for responding. Hey, yes.
It's probably like Harry and the Handsome Executives, like Leisure Suit Larry in the UK or something.
Leisure Suit Larry.
He comes up later. Yeah, he's in here. Yeah. Josiah Lanska, whom I knew as a young child. He was like 5 years old at the time. We'd be playing Joust, and he was the little kid next to us always going, make him go in the lava.
Well, see, look, then his response is apropos.
His response was King's Quest and Space Quest, and I remember him playing hours and hours of both of those on a PC Junior when I worked at Computer Land.
So,
the original NES was probably Swords and Serpents.
Oh
my.
Yeah?
man, I played that thing to death. Like it was,
hey, Chuck,
I could not get away from that one.
So Josiah was one of your old little friends, and you're like, hey man, you got to leave. We're closing the store.
Well, he hung out at the roller rink too, and we had one there too. It was the same people who own the roller rink.
Okay.
That owned it. And right. Well, if I do the math, he's in his mid 30s now. So that it was a long time ago. Jack Mangan wrote in Scorched Earth.
Mm.
Yep. Brad Miller said, why hasn't anyone said Super Mario Brothers? I like that one because even the one that the one that my sister wrote in, Candy Crush Saga, my sister Suzette wrote. And you think, well, that's not a classic yet, because we said, but classic doesn't necessarily have to mean old.
That's right?
Well, we did say to the person. So,
it's a perspective.
Yeah. The thing is Candy Crush is just a variation on
Tetris.
A thousand other ones before that. I mean, they're all basically the same game. They just keep changing them up.
Bejeweled.
Every single one of them are all the same. And I'm failing
somehow
here.
They nailed it on the mobile.
Yeah. I'm failing to get the original one, but, I want to say, not Breakout. The original that came out on the ColecoVision, actually.
Oh, okay.
I can kind of see it.
I've got gems in my head, but it's not Gems. It was something else. Coin Mania or Coin Maze, something like that, I think.
Hmm.
Anyway, sorry.
Scott Tyler says Space Invaders.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. We were just talking.
Yeah, that's a classic.
Hey, next time you look at a bottle of sriracha, look at like the oriental writing on it. It looks like Space Invaders to me.
Yes, it is Space Invaders.
There's rows and columns, and a few are missing. It's Space Invaders.
I feel like I've been hit by some Space Invaders after I eat too much of that stuff.
Yes.
Michael Slobodnik, one of our coworkers, says Space Quest 3.
Oh, I remember.
Goes
that.
Along with Josiah's Space Quest. Mm-hmm. We were thinking the original stuff. Jack Jaffe, of course, says Leisure Suit Larry.
Because pixelated naked people are so engaging.
I know.
Talk about imagination. You had to use all of your imagination for that game.
Pixel porn.
Pixelated porn, yes.
That's funny.
Derek McCarthy says, Adventure on the Atari 2600. Still play it occasionally on my PlayStation 2, which has some great classic collections.
Mm-hmm.
Good to know. And Bob Pankratz, mutual friend, says, everything referenced in Ready Player One.
Yes.
That's the winning answer right there.
That is the winning answer.
We'll go with that.
Yeah. Which is about everything we just mentioned.
And more. And much more.
All right, Chuck. Wait a minute. Quickly. What's yours?
I started out with Pong.
Oh, that's right. You said Pong.
Yep. I said Pong when I shared the original post. So I would watch say for
Infocom,
this.
Infocom stuff for me.
Zork.
Yeah.
Work. Oh, I know one. Fences. That was on the old
Fences.
That was on the original Trash 80. It came out of the magazine. You had to program it yourself.
Oh, any program you had to type in.
Yes.
Oh. There was extra value in that.
Syntax error.
Yep. took you 3 days to build something that was basically just lines that would show up on the screen in random places.
First you had to type in the assembler so that you could type in the code easier and it would have checksums so you knew if you screwed up a line rather than get to the end and it wouldn't work.
Wait, then you
have
do
to
that?
Debug the stupid thing, and the debugger never worked because the debug just created more bugs.
Ow. Let's do the history thing.
Let's do it.
There's a lot of love in this.
Roll. We got to roll.
Oh, we got to roll.
Pause. We didn't roll.
Pause. We didn't roll. There's a D20.
Okay.
Yeah, he's going to use Google. Let's see if his Google Home can do better than a one.
Let's see if Google can do better. All right, here we go.
What do you get, Craig?
Hey, Google, roll a 20-sided die.
Okay. It's a 12.
Right. That's better than one.
Well, that's better than me. I got a 6.
I got a 13.
So
Chuck, Craig, Mike, you ready? Ready, video engineer? We'll just leave everybody on the same screen. We did the 3-up display the whole show.
Makes it easy.
I'm first, right?
All right.
I'm first?
Chuck,
oh, I'm after
Craig,
you.
Mike, you got a 12. I got a 13. Last time I checked, at least in this reality. Good. Okay, here we go. On this day in history, for March 1st, 2017. This is the 60th day of the year in the Gregorian calendar. There are 305 days remaining in 2017. It was on this date in 1565 that the holy city... Well, it's not a holy city. I'm just reading around a wire at this point. Well, the city of Rio de Janeiro is founded.
325 years ago today, Sarah Good, Sarah Osborne, and Tituba were brought before local magistrates in Salem Village, Massachusetts, beginning what would become known as the Salem Witch Trials.
Burn the witches!
Burn the geeks!
It was on this date in 1700 that Sweden introduces its own Swedish calendar in an attempt to gradually merge into the Gregorian calendar, reverts to the Julian calendar on this date in 1712, and introduces the Gregorian calendar on this date in 1753.
I love that one. I just
ended up doing it.
That's funny. Wow.
And they'll be changing to a new calendar next week. Also, yes. On this date in 1790, the first United States census is authorized, and I believe that's the one that went missing.
Really?
Yeah. I was talking to a guy doing Ancestry the other day, and he said there's a gap, and I think it was that first one.
Wow. Okay. Yeah.
History gap. All right, on that same date in 1872, Yellowstone National Park is established as the first national park.
Tip of the hat to Ranger Craig.
Nice.
That's right. There you go.
It was also this date in 1893 that electrical engineer Nikola Tesla gives first public demonstration of radio in St. Louis, Missouri. Huge. Big thing.
he lit up a whole building doing that, if I remember right.
Yeah, radio. First test of RF radiation.
It was 121 years ago today that Henri Becquerel discovers radioactive decay. We're chaining these together.
That same date in 1936, the Hoover Dam is completed, and we've been in it.
And it's made out of vacuums.
Yes, right. A bunch of bags in there.
That's a lot. It was also this date in 1954 that Castle Bravo, a 15-megaton hydrogen bomb, is detonated on Bikini Atoll in the Pacific Ocean. Really? I didn't know that.
Yeah.
Resulting in the worst radioactive contamination ever caused by the United States. Go, America!
I know.
We can there blast Godzilla. Anything.
Where Godzilla came from, right?
Right.
51 years ago today, that Venera 3 Soviet space probe crashes on Venus, becoming the first spacecraft to land on another planet's surface. Mm.
And 22 years ago, Yahoo is incorporated.
Really?
Yeah.
Also, March 1st, 1998, Titanic became the first film to gross over $1 billion worldwide.
Just on a penny whistle solo.
That had to happen on my around my birthday. Okay, great.
It was on this date in 2006 that the English language Wikipedia reaches its 1 millionth article. Jordan Hill Railway Station. Fascinating.
And happy birthday goes out on this date to German philosopher and lexicographer Rudolf Gottlob. Oh, I should have taken the next one. No, maybe I should.
501.
Rudolf Gottliebnis, born in this date, 47. Whatever.
I'm even actually having a truffle time on that one. Gottliebnis. Whatever.
You're the next one, Mike. Good luck.
Okay. Jean Charles Della Faley? Sure. Flemish priest and mathematician was born on the same date in 1597.
E.M. Antoniotti, the Greek-French sounding like Italian-French.
Sure.
An academic was born 147 years ago today.
And Glenn Miller, American trombonist, composer, and bandleader, was born on that same date in 1904.
He's leading this band right now.
Yeah. No, that's Sousa. Born March 1st, 1910, English chemist and academic Nobel Prize laureate Archer John Porter Martin.
I could go for Porter.
Four names. Okay. Archer John Porter Martin.
I was listening to an audiobook that was narrated by a guy. His name was like John Davis the 17th. You know how far back you got to go for 17 generations?
That's impressive.
Or he just made this stuff up to sound impressive.
Yeah, a 23rd.
American soldier, pilot, and astronaut Deke Slayton was born 93 years ago today.
American actor, radio host, and stuntman Robert Conrad was born on this date in 1935.
I dare you to knock this battery off my shoulder.
Yeah.
Also born on that same date in 1943, Russian-German astronomer and physicist Rashid Sunayev.
Close enough. English singer, songwriter, and producer, actor Roger Daltrey. Here's where we get into the celebrities, folks. Hang on. Roger Daltrey was born today in 1944.
Also turning 72 today is American actor and director and founder of Starbucks, Dirk Benedict.
Starbucks. American actress Catherine Bach, born on this date in 1954. And hey, I still love those shorts.
She invented Daisy Dukes.
Oh, truly.
She put the Dukes in Daisy Dukes.
Yes.
Also born on the same date in 1954, American actor, director, and producer Ron Howard.
And American and director Jensen Ackles was born today on 1978.
That's right. He's on Supernatural.
Yes.
Oh, the band is winding down. They're on their final verse.
Hurry, knock it out.
I can't get all the birthdays done, so we'll let them finish, and then we'll go to the birthdays.
There we go.
That was so terrible, I think you gave me cancer.
Happy birthday to some of our birthdays. Well, birthday listeners, we're going to go to the listener calendar. We missed a week because we had to do all the extra prep for Show 500.
You're right. I would include a nap in there.
Actually, our video engineer was on vacation, so we couldn't.
We had to make sandwiches.
How much lettuce do you want in your sandwiches? Sorry. Bad Santa reference. Oh, kid. The usual amount. Whatever people put in their sandwich. That's my new favorite holiday movie. Happy birthday goes out today, the 23rd, to two people. Zaha Doom. I don't have my Zaha Doom clip handy. Darn it.
Zaha Doom.
Zaha Doom. Zaha Doom.
You go to Zaha Doom, you will die.
And the 23rd is also Keith Hughes, a.k.a. Ed Gizmo. 25th, couple of birthdays there. Norbert, happy birthday to you. And Sandy Shepard, Mark's lovely wife. This is where we get into the spouses and other family members are on the Technorama calendar. As a reminder, Mark, get your wife a present. Oh, too late. It was yesterday.
Hope you didn't forget.
That's what we get for taking a wife a week off. He missed his wife's birthday.
Taking a wife
off.
The 28th is the geek formerly known as Wayne something something from Bethlehem. That's what I'm just reading it. That's what
that is an awesome name.
I like that.
Longest name ever.
There is a Patreon member to Grant Pachoco's show. His name is, can't remember his real name, but it says AKA Butts in Gear. It's like B-U-T-Z. Anyway. 29th, this guy is probably only about 6 years old by this time, Paul Dove, a.k.a. Elmer from Malmesbury, UK. I hope that's even close.
Mm-hmm.
Oof. March, we're looking forward now. We went from the past to the present. March 7th, Ben Maddox, a.k.a. Captain Rootbeer, and Caleb from Dancing with Elephants is probably graduating high school by now. He's also no on kidding. The 7th. Awesome. He was a little kid. We have an audio clip from him about 10 years ago. So can only imagine. That's the way it was on this day in history for March
4th, 2017. By the way, I just pulled up their website and their last post, it says June 2010.
Okay, so that was almost 7 years ago.
Yeah.
I like those kids.
Hey, it was about 250 episodes back for us.
Wow. Yeah, that's about right, because we have a sign on the wall for 300. That was March of 2011, that I believe TD0013 made that for us. We even had some phone. I had a custom phone cover made for that one.
Mm-hmm.
Yep. That was pretty cool.
Okay. So what are we going to make for 500? A race car? We need some artwork in the studio for 500.
Something with SpaceX.
Okay.
This is definitely the year of SpaceX.
Okay. Hey, just a reminder, if you want to get on our birthday calendar, you can go over to chuckchat.com/wiki, and we'll be happy to give you or one of your family members a shout out at the appropriate time of year. And you can also go to our website at chuckchat.com/technorama and subscribe to the calendar. So as we add things, you will see them. We're going to take a quick break, as we want to do. Let's see.
Occasionally.
Oh, hey, we should play that video one. I don't know if Mike's seen that. The animated video thing. So we'll be back in just a sec. Stick with us.
End scene.
This fall, ABC brings you exciting spin-offs from Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. First, we bring you a group of women tasked with bringing in good-looking guys. Get ready for Marvel's Agents of STEAM, the strategic trackers of extremely attractive men. You're gonna love the team of G-Men, led by a bunch of no-name actors. Set in the 1940s, this team is in charge of bringing in aliens, and the only way that they can detect them is that they're wearing their fedoras incorrectly. Say hello to Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the strategic headwear assessment team.
We've had a sighting of a white male, in Boston no less, or as they say there, Boston, with his hat tipped to the right.
Okay, with a name like Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., you know what to expect. And finally, the most exciting task force that ties them all together. It's the government agency that comes up with all the acronyms for the other shows. You won't want to miss a single episode of Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D., the strategic agency of long acronyms department.
Don't worry if the show's no good. Just focus on the name of the department and come up with a catchy phrase to go with it. The rest will write itself. And make sure it starts with an S. And don't get cute again like you did with the last one, the Strategic Homeland Intelligence Team.
I kid you not, that was almost fully formed in my head at 4:30 a.m. on a business trip.
Of course. That's the best time. Hey, that's exactly when they happen.
I woke up with like all three of those acronyms and went,
it makes a lot of sense. Hey, now it makes a lot of sense.
There was no drinking involved on that one. Yeah, the salad one kind of threw me off.
I like the word salad. That's awesome.
Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. The Strategic Agency of Long Acronyms Division. It's even got redundancy in the title.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, it does.
Good news, everyone!
The good news is, I don't know if all of you are familiar with, but there's a very popular video series. If you haven't seen it, it's called The Crystal Caverns. There's a Mexican cave that has these ginormous crystals.
Yeah, amazing.
And it's hot down there.
Yes.
Well, anyway, NASA scientists have discovered living microorganisms trapped inside the crystals for as long as 60,000 years ago in that mine in Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
These strange ancient microbes have apparently evolved so they can survive on a diet of sulfite, manganese, and copper oxide, said Penelope Boston of NASA's Astrobiology Institute in a presentation over the weekend at a conference in the American Association for the Advancement.
It's part of my new diet. I know.
Extremophiles?
Yes.
Holy cow.
Truly.
This gives credence to what we may find on other planets, I'll bet you, hey?
Mm-hmm.
You know, go to I'll Europa, and what are they going to eat there?
And that's the thing, is everybody keeps talking about, oh, we haven't found life, it's probably out there, we just don't know what the hell we're looking for.
Right. And odds are it's probably not going to be intelligent ET life. It's going to be microbial. But look at all the diverse things we found just in the last 20 or 30 years. Nobody would have thought there was life in the hot pools at Yellowstone. But hey, there is. There's tons of it.
Nah, it's out there. It's just we haven't found it yet. We don't know how to talk to it. We don't know how to understand it. There's a lot of reasons why. And space is just big. It's really, really, really big.
And it has lots of space between the stuff.
Exactly.
Maybe that's why they call it space.
I mean, look, I've worked in a nightclub. I've seen life in some dark places.
All right,
I believe it's everywhere.
You earned that one.
I believe it's everywhere.
That was a stretch, but I'll give it to you.
Okay, thank you. I've done my research. How about that?
It's interesting that we're still finding things on this planet that surprise us. It's so cool. And then there's that guy. Remember the virus that they found, the long chain fire virus that they found in Siberia or somewhere like that, that was under the thawing.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. The guy is now, he's injecting himself with that stuff.
Yeah.
Now.
I saw that. Great idea.
Great idea. Because you know, if it's lived that long, it's going to make him live to be 200 years old.
Yeah. It's been frozen that long and it probably caused a mass extinction.
Exactly.
Hey, as soon as he injects it, his whole eyes go black and
zombie apocalypse.
Do you want zombies? Because this is how you get zombies, Lana.
Yeah. This is the recipe right here.
That's it.
I found it. It was in this mastodon.
just lying around.
On the space theme, we have a New Horizons scientist. You know what, Mike? Why don't you read this one?
Sure. It's, what the heck?
You got your right glasses on tonight?
No, I don't, but I'll try and fight through it. I just have to do a lot of this and I'll get it. Hey, that's better. Alan Stern and his fellow New Horizons scientists really want Pluto to become a full-fledged planet again. So do we all. Yay! the principal investigator of NASA's mission to Pluto, along with a few members of his team, want to change the definition of planets. According to the proposal they intend to present at the Lunar Planet Science Conference, they want the word planet to define any substellar mass body that has never undergone nuclear fusion. Yeah, that too, and has had sufficient self-gravitation to assume a spheroidal shape.
Circular
shape. A roundish kind of basketball thingy, adequately described by a triaxial
ellipsoid.
Ellipsoid,
yeah, I gave you a good
regardless
one.
Of its orbital parameters. In simpler words, they want a world that is described round object in space that are smaller than stars. That moves in an elliptical orbit around a stellar body.
Because the 2006 definition said it's a planet if it's A, round.
Right.
B, what was it? The third one is the one
self-gravity, wasn't it?
Well, it kills the third one. I can't remember the three. I'm ashamed right now, but the third one
was self-gravity.
It has the ability to clear its a path.
It could clear the debris around it. It's got to clear the debris field around it and actually and grow from the debris
and
field.
Ceres, Pluto, a number of these in our solar system do not have that third criteria, so they call them dwarf planets or planetoids.
Ceres, I agree with because it did not form. There's no, it didn't actually compress out of material. It's truly an asteroid. It's a piece of something else that's out there.
Oh, it's more like an amalgam of lots of asteroids. It's the big one.
Yeah, it's gathering stuff, but it hasn't actually achieved.
If it was a planet,
gravity.
There wouldn't be an asteroid belt.
Right.
There'd be a planet there.
Exactly, and that's what it's moving towards. Eventually, that will probably coalesce into something that's more like a planet. A
couple billion years when the sun gets big and engulfs the earth.
I'm not waiting for it. Okay. I mean,
you're not waiting for it.
It's going to take a little time. Pluto,
hold your breath, Michael.
Pluto got back into, gained interest after we were able to actually see it. Once we saw it and it became real to us. Before then, it was just this little speck out in the sky.
Right.
And you'd see this little gray, pale dot, and they'd show you pictures, and, oh, this is Pluto. It's like, okay, cool, yay. And
now moving against the background of other little dots.
Right. And then we get this, and it's like, holy cow, that planet is gorgeous. It is beautiful, and to not call that a planet is kind of a sin. So,
oh, here's the three criteria I should have read further. It's in orbit around the sun.
I was trying to tell you.
Oh, there we go.
Has sufficient mass for its self-gravity to overcome rigid body forces, so it assumes a hydrostatic equilibrium, a.k.a. nearly round shape, and has cleared the neighborhood around its orbit.
Mm-hmm.
And it didn't do that. Pluto was demoted because it doesn't clear the orbit of its asteroids and comets. Plus, it's only around twice the size of its moon. Charon, Chiron, whatever you want to call it. I've heard in multiple pronunciations. Stern thinks that this is BS. Though he and his team argue that the current definition is technically flawed. First, it recognizes as planets only those objects orbiting our sun, not those orbiting other stars or orbiting freely in the galaxy as rogue planets. I would love to spot one of those.
Yeah.
Second, it requires zone clearing, which no planet in the solar system could satisfy, since no new small bodies are constantly injected into the planet crossing orbits.
Right.
Like NEOs near Earth. Finally, and most severely, by requiring zone clearing, do you have a zoning ordinance? license? The mathematics of the definition are distance dependent, requiring progressively larger objects in each successive zone. For example, even an Earth-sized object in the Kuiper Belt would not clear its zone.
Not to mention planets that are ejected from their orbits from other stars that are just basically floating out there, rogue planets like what you're talking about. Because it's orbital dynamics, which is so cool once you go down that rabbit hole, but man, you can get buried down there really quick.
There's I don't want to find any rogue
floating around.
I want to find those rogue planets, make sure they're not coming at us.
They're hard to spot because they're not mm-hmm. lit up real well.
Right, because they're not close to suns.
Like I said, as long as they're not coming at us or we don't notice it too late, I'm okay with that.
I'm happy that we're consistently questioning the status quo. Mm-hmm. That's the way science should go.
It's not in a super, super important debate. I mean, whether it's a planet or not a planet, it doesn't change the fact that
it's still there. It is what it is.
It is what it is. The science is still the same. Yep. Nothing changes. It's just our limited definition of what it is. Big deal. It doesn't matter. So I love this debate. It's fun. It can rage on. It's like Star Wars versus Star Trek. It's exactly like that.
You have
both camps. They argue about it, and somebody changes a mind, and then it goes on and on. And this debate's going to keep going.
Star Wars versus Star Trek, Marvel versus DC.
Yep, exactly.
Nike versus Roblox. Reebok.
Speaking of robots, since that was a good faux pas, Craig, take the next story.
Rebart. All right, so. Bill Gates wants to tax robots to compensate for job losses.
That's not a horrible idea.
All right, well let's dig in here and see if we can get the devil in the details. So how would you deal with the likelihood of robots automation will likely lead to people losing their jobs? Mm-hmm. Former Microsoft and co-founder Bill Gates. The answer is pretty straightforward. Tax the robots.
Mm-hmm.
That's his quote. I'm just
kidding. Yeah.
In an interview with Quartz, I guess it's a magazine or a blog or something. Gates argues that taxing worker robots would offset job losses by funding training for positions where humans are still needed, such as child or senior care, or could even slow automation to a more manageable rate if necessary. Gates is well aware of the potential pitfalls. He knows that the taxation could ultimately slow innovation by making worker robots prohibitively expensive. However, he's convinced that the governments should be figuring policy out so that they're ready for when it happens.
Because the biggest change that's going to happen is the loss of all factory jobs and probably driving jobs, hauling jobs, cab jobs, self-driving cars.
Yep.
Factory automation, all of these things are going to offset workers in vast amounts because it comes down to productivity versus cost. And we've finally got to a point now where it costs more to put a human in the job than it does to put a robot in the job that works 24/7 without complaint and does it. Everything perfectly.
No benefits.
Every single time. Yeah. No benefits. No health insurance. No unions. No, nothing. So this is the thing coming down the pike that nobody's talking about is that technology is offsetting our workforce. So no matter what happens, that workforce is going away.
It's been doing that for a while, though. I mean, robots in the workforce are nothing new.
Hey, cars. Yeah, for cars.
But it's ramping up to a level that it's before robots were just doing the heavy lifting. They were doing the big odd jobs inside on the factory floor. Right. You still needed a human to go in there and do the detail work. Not anymore. The robots have become so sophisticated now that they can basically mimic and replace almost everything on the floor now. So that's the change. And with the automation and the self-driving cars, that takes care of our trucking fleet and our bus fleet.
Well, even AI and machine learning, we're talking about
absolutely
replacing call center employees, or at least reducing the need for as many call center employees when you can enable self-service like that.
Well, Elon's been saying it for a long time that a basic wage income may be on the horizon, and it may be the only way that we are going to be able to survive.
Well, we'll see. For everybody?
Yeah, a universal basic income is what he's saying. Basically, everybody gets a check every month just so that you can survive until you can find something that you can do that robots and machines and AI hasn't taken away. So you can find some sort of work, to something to do with your time.
Yeah.
Besides sit home and I play see where, with trains.
Well, I see where Bill Gates is coming from. But I don't think I want to tax it so much where it stymies the whole thing, you know, because I think, you need to progress with it.
It also has to fill in. It's got to fill some gaps. And I think what he's saying is it's not so much that it's going to deter factories from putting machines in. It's just basically going to replace some of the income that you're not going to get off of a machine. Basically, if there's no human there, you're not taxing them for Social Security and income tax and, you know, job and welfare, whatever. Mm-hmm. All those taxes that you normally get on your paycheck, you don't have to give those to a robot.
Right.
So that's revenue loss that is going to start tipping the balance and affecting us in a big way.
Infrastructure, okay.
Medicare, the things that we're so used to having, our healthcare and our welfare and whatever that we have coming into the system goes away. And as that goes away, that deficit is going to have to be made up somewhere. And if the workforce isn't there, the people aren't there, the jobs aren't there,
the taxes and the revenue stream dries up.
All of a sudden, the bridges don't get fixed, the roads don't get fixed. Well, they don't get fixed now, but hey, that's a whole other conversation.
Get the robots to fix them.
Get the robots to fix them, and that's it. Wait until the robot pavers come along. Wait till the robot construction jobs come. Wait till the robot builders come online, where they can basically digitally print a building with no intervention whatsoever. We're almost there.
The Japanese
are doing
that
right now.
There's a 3D concrete printer.
3D concrete printer. There's more jobs gone. So, I mean, as this technology progresses, we become more and more irrelevant as a workforce. Let that sink in a little bit.
I'm going to be retired by then.
That's what I'm saying. I don't have to worry about it. I got another 5, 10. I'm out of here. So I don't.
There's no robot that's going to be doing this podcast.
I don't know, Craig. I think they could be very entertaining.
They'll be more funnier than we are.
They can actually read names properly.
No, they can't. Not yet, no.
Google Translate.
We're still working on that, Mike.
Siri, can you do the podcast for me?
That was a good one, Chuck. Ha, ha, ha.
Next week, that's it. 500 shows, we're done. It'll be all AI and robots next week.
That's right. That was quick.
I told you we're retiring. Well, by now it seems... Oh, we've got to do the thing.
We got to do the thing?
Hacks and Strange Stories thing. By now it seems safe to say that Doom can be played on any device a person wants. It's been adapted for printers, ATM machines. I would love to see that.
On an ATM machine?
Give me $20 and a big gun.
Go get it yourself.
Calculators, the Apple Touch Bar on the MacBook Pros, and many others, but... none of these devices have 370 horsepower to send you careening down the road honking like a maniac while you blow demons back to hell.
No.
A YouTuber going by the name Vexal uploaded this video tutorial showing what he claims to be a step-by-step guide to playing Doom on the console screen of a Porsche 911.
Wow.
That would be moderately interesting on its own, but as he explains, the car's shifter, horn, accelerator, and steering wheel all control the game.
No way. Sure, Oops. Kids, this is safe. Do this at home.
What if there's a right turn in the hallway and there's not a right turn on the road?
Right?
I mean, you're looking at the screen and you're trying...
No. This is like one of the epically bad ideas that are of bad ideas.
Maybe as an augmented reality thing on the windshield, it might be fun.
Maybe in the garage on jack stands.
Oh, hey, yeah.
That could be really fun.
According to his steps, take a flash drive that contains a single file with the car's VIN number on it, insert the drive into the Porsche's USB slot, and start the car. That should take the computer system into debug mode. Then insert the game. He shows Doom 2, but says it'll work with the original as well, and select it on the console screen. Once the game is fired up, start driving, start shooting, and start praying, because it's not safe. In fact, Bexel says that this video was shot on private property and warns not to try this on public roads.
And you were worried about people texting and driving. You ain't seen nothing yet.
Hey, you know what? I'm going to tell you something. It's a little off top. Well, you know, it's right on topic. The other night, you know, I walked my dog down the road. And I've got her trained where when a car's coming, I can say wait or stop. And she'll stop and wait for the car to go by. And we keep walking.
Mm-hmm.
Well, inside my neighborhood, I'm literally, there's like a vacant lot right down the road. I'm just walking down there casually. And I hear a car coming from behind. So I turn around. The dog's behind me. I said, stop. And she stops. And then I'm watching the car. And it just is coming straight at us. And it keeps coming straight at us. I'm like, the hell? I'm holding my phone up and I'm like, as soon as they went by, I saw the girl, as soon as she corrected really quick, she had the phone in her hand. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's dark. I was like, you gotta be kidding me. And,
that's when you throw like a slushy at her or something.
Well, all I had was my phone in my hand.
I didn't see you.
Oh, I thought I was gonna have to push the dog into the yard, you know, to get him. Anyway. So on the way back, walking down the sidewalk, right on the along the curb.
Same girl.
And here comes another car. No, another car comes. Same freaking thing.
Mm-hmm.
I was like, "What? I'm getting in the house. This is just too dangerous."
Coming over here tonight, I had the same thing. I almost got in a pile up on the freeway. Somebody texting on their phone and drifting into the wrong lane. Somebody coming up behind him, doing the same damn thing, and they almost catch each other on the freeway. And I'm like, where am I going? I really was at that moment of, okay, I can do the ditch or I can do the car next to me. Who am I taking out?
You know, I am man enough to say I cannot text and drive. Even, you know, people do it anyway. You can't.
No.
You can't.
No.
Period.
Yeah, so
it's too dangerous.
This story kind of, I'm not sure what I think of it. It's cute, it's clever, but it has real potential to.
You know, I'm all for if you can hack it and do it, go for it. But no, not this one.
I'll stick to the ATM. Maybe if I win, I get some money.
Yeah, that's what I was saying. You know, it's
look,
eventually
I found a bag
you'll
of
hack
coins.
Somebody else's account and you might get a bill paid.
Now, if a check of a sword comes out of the slot.
Sword.
Yeah.
BFG. I need a BFG withdrawal.
Stabbed in the gut. Speaking of weapons you don't want.
Oh, nice.
A Russian programmer 3D prints his very own T-800 Terminator.
Hey, I got bad news for the Terminator. Taxes are coming.
No,
he's not in industry. He's fine. He's just out to kill people.
The machine-dominated world envisioned by James Cameron in The Terminator once seemed like pure science fiction, but now, not so much. Just a few days ago, a Russian programmer from Perm unveiled his 3D-printed version of the T-800 Cyberdyne Systems Model 1001.
Wow.
Famous, he featured in Cameron's famous blockbuster. And while it can currently only move its head, whew, thank goodness,
mm-hmm.
it's equipped with a brain that allows it to speak and even answer. And what are you thinking?
Well,
it's in a wheelchair.
It's in a wheelchair. Like, he doesn't look too threatening.
It's the Stephen Hawking model.
Keep in mind it's a paraplegic, so we're okay there. We can outrun it.
We're good for now.
I'm sorry. I just had this really sick thought that Stephen Hawking's consciousness is going to get uploaded into that. He's going to go, son of a bitch.
We're going to digitally save off Stephen Hawking so we can use him later. That's great. Get him with Kurt's will. He'll figure out how to make that work.
Karma's a bitch.
Hey, look, if you scroll down a little bit, it looks like he's been teaching the thing how to drink. He's got sunglasses and a hat on and a shot glass.
He's got to have the necessities.
He's got a blue LED. Mm-hmm. He's entertaining the cat. Oh, hey, Gangsta T-800. I forgot that on the...
yes.
I didn't get that on the video stream. I apologize.
Yeah, he's got like,
nice.
Hey, it looks like he's got 3D glasses on and
he does have 3D.
He's got the red blue glasses.
Oh, he's watching the Terminator 3D.
Yeah, that's it.
With a, what's he got? A bottle of Jaeger or something?
It's some nasty Russian alcohol, I'm sure.
Oh, probably. Motor oil.
Yes.
Craig, I think we are running a little long in this show, so we're going to have to just mention the last two. We want to encourage you to go to our show notes on our website. Hasbro has the 40th anniversary Star Wars figures. Can you believe it's 40 years already?
Wow.
Do you feel old now?
Yes.
I just listened to a book by Warwick Davis called Size Matters Not, and that makes me feel old too. But good book. If you haven't read it or listened to it, I encourage you to do so. The man's amazing. He's had a tough life, but he's also bounced back real nice. There's also a treasure trove of internal Apple memos that have been discovered in a thrift store.
Yeah, some of them are interesting to read.
From December 20th, 1979. It doesn't say who it's to or what the subject is. It's just a handwritten note that says, Randy, what needs to be done to your protection scheme in order for it to work under DOS 3.3?
Yeah. They're discussing software, encryption, but
protection. So you copy protection. So you don't pirate the disks.
I see latent class action suits coming out of this.
Hey, don't copy that floppy.
Don't copy that floppy. I used to have copy 2 plus and copy 2 PC, so I could copy my Lotus 1-2-3 disks.
I had Mirror Imager.
And the original old Wolfenstein. Did I just admit something on the air?
we'll cut it out in post.
Alrighty. A special thank you. I'm going to play this as we go. Special thank you to our Patreon members. We have a new one this week. Thank you very much to our latest and greatest $2 donator, Brad P. from NJ. Thank you. He is another longtime listener. He's been around for quite some time. We appreciate his donation.
Yeah, along he's with old like we are.
John Noble, Leon, Avner Braverman, Amy Bowen, Nick St. Gabriel, Chris MC, Alexis Duran, Ben Vaughn, Dennis Patnod, Saturday Morning Media, Steve Therian, Mike Wills, and Kyle Nishioka. They all donate to make this show, well, something. Thank you to you. You keep this
500 going. Or something.
500 or something. I wish we had started this back in show 500. There have been a lot of changes to how you can earn a buck doing podcast in the last 12 years.
Not really.
Yeah, I was like, wait a minute. Are you doing something?
Yeah, what? I was going to say, what are you talking about?
No, just in the ways you can ask for money.
Oh,
we used to have
tip jars,
and then there was Google AdSense and Amazon.
Hey, I even stood out on the road with a hat.
Yeah, well, the begging aspect has evolved quite a bit, but
We're still begging, and we appreciate the we appreciate the donations.
Absolutely,
I'll hang my cardboard podcasting sign out there anytime and stand on the corner.
I've always relied on the kindness of strangers.
Free awkward hugs.
Awkward hugs.
All right, we did get some comments from Yorga, and they're in the. We're going to revive the What the Chuck segment, but I think we're going to save that for 501. Which sounds more like a nonprofit agency, right? 501c3 or a really old 3Com card. I'm not sure. Okay, nobody laughed at that.
I was painful that I actually knew what that was.
Our question this week.
I stopped listening a minute ago.
He's already signed out. We'll do the sign out music then. Our question this week is, what is your favorite lyric out of a song? Name the song and a band.
Ooh. So many.
I think at this age, I might have to go with something like Stayin' Alive.
You know, you're going back to disco. Okay. I got some Pink Floyd lyrics I like.
We will put that on Facebook as well, probably Wednesday or Thursday, so we can have any time for the next show. Thank you very much for everybody who has joined us on the Facebook page. I have not been reading the comments. It's been off to my right the whole time. Normally, it's in front of my face. But thank
Stephen
you.
Stephen Hawking is Skynet.
He's probably smart enough to start the whole darn thing. Call us on the listener line, email us. You know how to get a hold of us. Thank you very much, Michael, for stopping by for the epic
Not
show 500.
No problem. I'm comfortably numb.
Nice tie-in
Craig,
with the lyrics.
Sign us out with the binary high five.
101. Thank you, everybody.